Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I'm having a difficult time gauging what the interest is in RFK Jr.'s campaign among some erstwhile Trump voters. So I guess this will be one gauge. Did you pay attention to the big VP announcement for RFK Jr. yesterday? As anticipated, introducing Nicole Shanahan, Google co-founder Sergey Brin's ex-wife, as his running mate. 312-642.
Sorry, 312-642-5600. And our turnkey.pro text line is 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Wasn't your first reaction like, who's that?
No.
Because you know who she was?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good talk, and I'm just going to not talk for 4 hours. Go on.
Okay. Good. RFK's campaign kickoff started with a land acknowledgement ceremony. So when we've talked about RFK Jr. Before, we've mentioned, you know, I understand the appeal because of the pox on both houses message he's offering. But then you have to actually peel back the layers and remember who RFK Jr. is on a range of issues. So, I mean, here's the kickoff before you got to RFK Jr., before you got to Nicole Shanahan.
California, Northern California, can I hear it? Oh!
That was on behalf of the Mwakma Ohlone tribe land acknowledgement ceremony to kick off VP announcement. This sort of land acknowledgement ceremony you might be treated to if you were wandering around the campus at UC Berkeley. Just a little bit of insight. Here's some more. Campaign video that was rolled before the speechifying. And this is RFK Jr., of course, circumnavigating the country, talking to folks. That's what's profiled in the video, as is customary in these sorts of things. And the exchange between a RFK Jr. and black residents of some unnamed community, including one black woman who's wearing a mask while she decries racism in food deserts and racism as the cause of food deserts in black neighborhoods.
Which is an organic farm in the middle of a what people would call a blighted community.
The things that we're dealing with as black people in our communities is as a result of racism, redlining, all those different things that kept our communities at ill health. The food is sick that our community is getting because it's coming from Big Ag.
The African American communities are food deserts. You cannot get good food here. You look at what black kids are eating. They're drinking big gulp Coca-Colas.
Uh-huh. So it's, right buying into the identitarian politics. There's not an economic and public safety reason for the food deserts that exist in urban centers. We recall just a couple of weeks ago, since this took place in Oakland, that Oakland resident who was acting as a citizen journalist, documenting all of the restaurants and businesses, black woman, by the way, closed or closing, including a Walmart, including an In-N-Out Burger. And by the way, they have, fast food and big gulps in the suburbs, too. It just speaks to a certain mentality, a certain mindset, a certain understanding of what's going on in this country and where and the problems that beset urban centers, and to platform racism as the sort of singular or fundamental cause, I think, is a tell. So this is that's sort of who RFK really is. RFK Jr. really is and has been for the past 50 years, as opposed to sort of the RFK that has some appeal because he makes statements like this, which are not inaccurate in his intro of Nicole Shanahan.
Those policies, both of them engineered, transferred $4 trillion from the middle class to this new oligarchy of billionaires. They created 500 new billionaires in 500 days, a billionaire a day. Today, they ran up a greater debt than all previous presidents combined since George Washington. Two men with a single term in office each. Now, they don't want us talking about those things. They want us instead to hate each other, to fear the other guy. But to young Americans, they look like two sides of the same coin. If we vote for either of them again, we can expect and we will deserve more of the same. The annihilation of our middle class, the further impoverishment of working poor, more chronic disease, more epidemics, more environmental destruction, more debt, more war, and fewer constitutional rights.
So some of that is sort of center cut populism, the sort of populism you might hear from Donald Trump, that he's trying to turn against Trump. And Biden, obviously, as a beltway creature, is a different story. But he's not wrong. Some of his criticisms of Trump, where he folds in to his that he folds into his distillation of what happened during the pandemic. Right. And it is worth noting, to be fair, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya from Stanford was one of the speakers at RFK's VP announcement yesterday. So I'm not saying he doesn't have credibility when with respect to his criticisms of COVID, but frankly, that's the easy part. When you get into what he actually wants to do, believes. Yeah. And I think most Trump voters actually have sussed this out. This is why RFK Jr.'s presence in this race is a net benefit to Trump, according to all the polling that we've seen thus far. Trump expands his lead with RFK Jr. in the race. So Nicole Shanahan, 38-year-old attorney, actually grew up in the Oakland area. It came from a sort of a troubled family background that she went through in some detail. But in terms of her value proposition as a co-candidate here, it's a little strange. First of all, Del Bigtree is RFK Jr.'s comms person. If you don't know who that is, you can look him up. But I mean, he's a sort of ideologically anti-vax individual. And when we talk of all the doctors that we've talked to, medical public health professionals we talked to during the 3 years, last 3 years, well, into the fourth year now as we're doing the postmortem on COVID, nobody's anti-vax categorically. It's a case-specific thing based on the science. But that's not where Del Bigtree is. And I'm not sure that's where RFK Jr. is. And I'm not sure that's where Nicole Shanahan is. There's a little bit of a Jenny McCarthy in Nicole Shanahan. She has a daughter, does Nicole Shanahan, with her ex-husband. And I understand from her announcement speech that her daughter is got an autism diagnosis. And so she's talking about pharma in that context. You can be opposed to the therapeutic state and you can have grave concerns about big pharma, which I do, and not take it all the way to ideological anti-vax land. This is sort of center cut of her remarks yesterday at the VP rollout. Listen to her focus.
There are three main causes. One is the toxic substances in our environment, like endocrine disrupting chemicals in our food, water, and soil, like the pesticide residues, the industrial pollutants, the microplastics, the PFAs, the food additives, and the forever chemicals that have contaminated nearly every human cell. Yes, and it makes you angry to hear this. It makes me angry to say it because we shouldn't be here right now. Second is electromagnetic pollution. You don't hear politicians talking much about that either, but it is something we need to look at. As Bobby says, we need to investigate every possible cause of chronic disease epidemic that is devouring our nation from the inside. Third, I'm sorry to say, is our medications. Pharmaceutical medicine has its place, but no single safety study can assess the cumulative impact of one prescription on top of another prescription and one shot on top of another shot on top of another shot throughout the course of childhood. We just don't do that study right now, and we ought to.
Yeah, okay. Oh, by the way, she also has been a previous donor to Mayor Peabut, to Joe Biden, and to George Soros-backed DA in L.A., George Gascon. So, you know, if this is, if you think this third party, the RFK third party, is sort of the Revolt 2.0, if Trump was Revolt 1.0, yeah, I don't think so.
Well, RFK, he's polling in double digits in Arizona, Wisconsin, and Nevada. I don't think this is going to help him, though.
There's some populist notes to his candidacy, but if you actually look at where they're coming from a very strange place. I won't go so far as to say, like, degrowth, deindustrialization, but it was an odd announcement when all of the things that afflict Americans in everyday life and challenge our country, including the border, which there was nary a mention of, even though I know RFK Jr.'s gone down there. But just in terms of where they devoted so much of their energy and chronic disease and esoteric references to chemicals. And I'm all for clean water and clean air and all of that. Of course, everybody is. And you can have that conversation, but it's just weird to make that the centerpiece of what you're saying, particularly as you're rolling out somebody that most people have never heard of. It was odd, but RFK Jr. is a little odd.
Yeah, it's weird.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Rhonda McDaniel was in for one weekend as an NBC contributor, and now she's out. But before we even get back to her, because we discussed it a bit yesterday, KJP. KJP is instructive in this conversation because she is a dimwit who is not particularly adept at understanding public policy, communicating succinctly, But she's got a high identitarian score. So she's the White House spokeshuman. And she's a future MSNBC talk show host, just like her predecessor, Jen Psaki. It's a nice landing spot for these leftist ignoramuses. I mean, that's the whole lineup, isn't it? Certainly the primetime lineup. So KJP was on a North Carolina radio show to pitch the wares of the big guy and the administration. North Carolina, swing state, or at least it better be for Biden. If it's not, he's in trouble. This talk show host named Mark Garrison had a couple of questions for her that you would think would be unsurprising, but she took deep offense. One was about Biden's health, not exactly a curveball. The other about Bidenflation, also not a curveball.
When I told a number of people that I was talking to you today, it was interesting, though. They all said, would you please just ask her, does the president have dementia? And so before I move on from that, does he?
Mark, I can't even believe you're asking me this question. That is a credibly offensive question to ask.
But you know people ask it.
No. You're taking us down this rabbit hole. Let me be very clear about this. For the past several years, the president's physician has laid out in a comprehensive way the president's health. This is a president, if you watch him every day, if you really pay attention to his record and what he has done, you will see exactly how focused he's been on the American people, how historic his actions have been. And so I'm not even going to take the premise of your question. I think it is incredibly insulting, and so we can move on to the next question.
Gas prices and grocery prices, then, big topics here in North Carolina. How does Mr. Biden win votes when people don't have as much disposable income?
Look, the president understands. He grew up in a middle class family, a working class family in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He gets it. He understands how difficult it is for Americans who are sitting around their kitchen table every month trying to figure out what they're going to pay for. You have to remember, when the president walked into this administration, there were multiple crises happening. There was COVID. There was the economy was in the tailspin because of the last administration, because of what the President Trump left us with. Now you're asking me about gas prices. The president took action on gas prices. Let's not forget, Russia's invasion on Ukraine skyrocketed prices of gas. And because the president took action, we are in a different place than we were a year ago on gas prices. Eggs, milk, seafood products, all the important groceries, those costs have gone down because of what this president has been able to do. And with that, thank you so much, Mark. Have an amazing, amazing day.
Wow. Wow.
Oh. She hung up.
Wow.
I mean, Mark, listen, I am nominating you to get a press corps badge, and you need to go to the White House. I'm sorry, but you asked four incredibly salient, important questions that are all front of mind, nothing out of bounds, no baba booing or anything like that, right? And you did it exactly right on. And I don't understand the fragility of this person.
I don't understand the fragility of the person. That's why you had to hear the whole thing. I don't understand the fragility of this person. It's such an insight into the Ronna McDaniel story and the story of the D.C. press corps. Why do they throw temper tantrums if they are asked? I mean, first of all, hardly probing interview. Does the president really have dementia? Come on, what's up with inflation? I mean, they're basically prompts to give your response to something that is roiling this administration. You know, supermajorities on both issues. Supermajority thinks the president is diminished, and a supermajority blames the president for the fact that they need 20% more money in 2024 just to pay for what they paid for in January of 2021, and they don't have it.
Right.
They're prompts. They're prompts to offer your talking points.
It's supposed to be scripted and framed to make them look good. And that's not what, but that's reality. And the fact that she hung up on him, I mean, come on. She's horrible at her job. We all know that. But it's so it's just so telling of that administration.
But it was essentially scripted. It's basically these two issues, that have been talked about ad nauseum and will continue to be, go. I mean, you couldn't have an easier setup to try to do some damage control, some spinning on issues that plague the administration. And instead, she gets indignant because of what the his cohort said at the end. I don't understand why she is so fragile. They are so fragile. Why? Because they have lived a life where they don't have to confront viewpoints that are not theirs.
And certainly
professionally now, they can completely ignore anybody who attempts to present a viewpoint that isn't theirs.
They say text message liberals can't answer tough questions, but those weren't tough questions.
Well, exactly. So now you understand the temper tantrum. I mean, if it wasn't obvious before, that to me, in large measure, explains the temper tantrum over Ronna McDaniel. We've been spending all this time saying Trump and Trump world are election deniers and threats to our democracy. And then you're going to bring one of these election deniers slash threats to our democracy in our house where we're going to have to speak to them. We don't deign to speak with them. They are not legitimate. We don't recognize them as Americans who have any place in civil discourse because they attempted to overthrow the government. They attempted to overthrow an election. They are attempting to steal our democracy. They are attempting to institute the Fourth Reich. And since that position, since that is the position they've taken, and they're in a position where they do not have to entertain opposing viewpoints, they do not have to defend that position. They just have to repeat it. Then, of course, they're not going to allow even a pathetic example of a Republican communicator in Ronna McDaniel in their house because she's already been branded. She's illegitimate. Everyone associated with that man and that position is illegitimate. We will not platform people that we believe are illegitimate, which is to say people who disagree with us. And so they don't. They have House Republicans. House broken Republicans, the Mitt Romneys of the world, and the Michael Steeles,
Adam Kinzingers,
who will go along with their premises, will properly decry Trump, will throw up their hands and say, "I don't recognize my Republican Party," and that is those are the parameters of discourse. They are, you know, the width of a checkbook. And that's how they like it. So Ronna went. And by the way, it's a reminder, all this, you know, some news, we're talking about this yesterday. Oh, some news director better tell them that I'm your employer and this and that. You have the power relationship reversed, if you think that. Some news director, some general manager is going to tell you have the, that's like saying some coach, some general manager better tell LeBron James or some other NBA superstar, this is what time it is on this team. You don't understand who's in charge of these organizations anymore.
Well, times have changed, and clearly the talent won in this, and here was the big announcement.
NBC News leadership has announced that former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel will not be an NBC News contributor. We have a new email and update that's come out just within this hour. So this is sort of breaking news here within our organization on a story that has garnered significant attention and criticism. And what I'm going to do now, to be very clear, is read the entire update from NBC Universal News Group chairman.
Why am I listening to this? Why am I listening to Ari Melber?
Because you're not now because it's off. But it was just how high and mighty they think they are. Like, we don't.
Yeah, they report on themselves.
3 days of hell. Yes.
They report on themselves. They're the center of the attention. You would think they'd actually want a Ronna McDaniel because she, I mean, as we said yesterday, based on her performance on Meet the Press, she'll probably announce that she's leaving the Republican Party and becoming a Democrat in about 2 to 3 weeks.
Right.
So maybe when she does that, they'll invite her back. But otherwise, there's probably somebody else. I mean, she can whore herself out to some other outlet, I'm sure.
Well, she signed a $300,000 deal that she's getting that $300,000 for 3 days' work. Good for her. I mean, I just still, it's Mitt Romney's niece. I mean, who did they, it's not like they were hiring a Trump family member or Ivanka Trump or Don Jr. They just got their panties in a bunch over nothing.
I don't know how to explain this. She's the RNC chairwoman.
I know, and she
was had that. She had that title. She was a good soldier to the extent she has the capacity to be a good soldier on some of these issues. Certainly, that's what they thought. Thus, Kristen Welker, would you like to apologize for propping up Donald Trump's lies about the 2020 election? Would you like to apologize, Kristen Welker, for perpetuating the Russian collusion hoax? No, she didn't push back with that. She starts from the, well, now I'm my own person, and, you know, you have to be a team player and blah, blah, blah. She's awful. You would think they would want her because that's what they like. They like awful perceived Republican contributors to to give the pretense of robust discussion of, you know, a broad spectrum of opinion. It's nothing of the sort. George in Naperville.
Yeah, Dan, the only questions that should be asked about Biden is how do they keep up with such a dynamo?
That's exactly right. And is it true that he's a tiger in the sack? That's right. Those are the questions. Those are the questions. How? Right. He's dizzying. He's exacting. He is. Yeah. Right. He's just a 24/7 bundle of energy. Go, 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 go,
keep
Joe.
Up with him. Yeah.
Scott and Aurora, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I find it hilarious. They hire McDaniels, and there's a big uproar. But whenever these corporations hire a government official, there's nothing to be said. So it just shows you how in bed they are with these government officials.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The big government press corps. Well, of course they're going to welcome in, you know, former functionaries of the big government. Why does Ronna McDaniel want to be an NBC contributor? Why does the Republican Party indulge Face the Nation and Meet the Press and the Stephanopoulos show, particularly after the Nancy Mace episode, but even before that? This is the problem with Republicans. They so want to be a part of the ecosystem within the old corporate media, the big government press corps. They so want to be platformed by them. They so want to be part of that in crowd, taken seriously, have their turn on these TV shows. Why? In service of what?
I don't know. Maybe Ramaswamy, she needed a job. I don't know.
Oh, please. Ramaswamy had it right. She's starving. Yeah, she's going to have to get one of those migrant EBT cards from New York City, Mayor Eric Adams, if she doesn't take the NBC contributor gig. I mean, give me a break. What are you talking about? She needs a job. She doesn't need a job.
Maybe
any
she
old
wants
job.
To work.
Yeah, good. Now answer the. Now focus on the actual question, not about whether she can work, about why NBC, why one of these antagonistic old media, new Marxist-controlled outlets. Why would you want to be in service to them? How is that advancing the Republican Party flag by conferring your legitimacy onto them as an even-handed outlet, as a provider of fact and a platformer of diverse opinion? None of that is true, but I'm going to go on and play my role in this pantomime to defraud half the country into believing it's true. Right. That's what I thought.
Well, I mean, maybe they were going to change. They wanted an opposing view. And then all of a sudden, everybody freaked out about it. But it's a graphic reminder and a good reminder to people that they don't care about Republicans. They don't care about the whole story. And another reminder why you cannot trust the mainstream media and you cannot trust
So
NBC
why would you
ABC.
Defend anyone who wants to get a gig there to further this charade based on what you just said? How do you defend Ronna McDaniel? She doesn't know that? We don't all know that? Why waste your time?
Maybe she was naive and thought that this was, you know,
she's
time
the
for
RN, former RNC chairwoman. Are you kidding?
Well, they took Michael Steele and he became a Democrat. So maybe they thought they could do the same thing with her.
You have it exactly right. You have it exactly opposite. I'm not asking what MSNBC's interest is. God. I'm asking what Ronna McDaniel's interest is. She's naive. She's a babe in the woods. Really? She hasn't been around for the last 8 years. She's not an adult. She has no recognition of what's going on. That's your defense. That's not a defense.
I didn't say that. I don't know what's going on in her head. I don't know what her personal motives were to doing this. I don't know. I don't know the woman.
I don't care what her motives were. It is the wrong play. And I'm not just talking about her. I'm talking about any Republican. What was the conversation we had after the Nancy Mace Stephanopoulos episode? Now, Republicans, Nancy Mace, I'm never going on there again. No, now you're not. Why were we going on there in the first place? Why are you party to your opposition? This is like when Republicans give, you know, provide donations to Democrats. Oh, well, he's a different kind of, that's a, in furtherance of your, why are you financing your enemy? Your political enemy. That's what they are. And so is the old corporate media outlets. Why are you furthering their agenda? How does that make any sense? Kevin in Austin, Texas.
The only reason NBC has a Republican on are three: to embarrass them, to have them flip on another Republican, or have them go through a struggle session. Any Republican. That's what they do every time.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And now they can. Now they had another bite at the apple. Ronna McDaniel, illegitimate, part of a Republican Party that tried to steal the 2020 election, that tried to overthrow the government and blah, 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 that flacks for January 6th insurrectionists and so on and so forth. And we got rid of her. Everybody give me a high five and let's send out the fundraising letter on behalf of the DNC. Striking a blow. They don't care. They don't care that their audience is smaller than our audience on this show, most of these MSNBC and CNN shows. Nobody watches this nonsense. But yet the Republican Party is pulling at the shirt tails. Please let me participate. Please let me participate. Because they cut it up and put it on social media where it gets a little attention among people that are otherwise inclined to despise Republicans and be as intolerant of diverse viewpoints as the Morning Joe cast. It absolutely makes no sense. And Ronna McDaniel is the latest installment of that. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Here's two headlines that are interesting. 44% of Americans can't pay an unexpected $1,000 expense. 44% of Americans cannot pay an unexpected $1,000 expense.
I can believe that because nobody has money in their checking account anymore because everything is so flipping expensive and gas is expensive. Groceries, you know the list of items, and it's not getting better anytime soon. And then you see what Eric Adams is doing is giving $1,400 prepaid cards to people who are here illegally. Americans could use that money.
But yes, anyways. That's the other headline. New York City begins handing out prepaid debit cards to migrants in controversial program, $53 million worth of debit cards.
They'll be loaded weekly with about $350 for a family of four with two young children under the age of five. The city says in working with the New Jersey-based vendor called Mokify, the cards will only be able to be used at bodegas and grocery stores and only will be able to use to buy food and baby supplies. This will be very similar to SNAP, also known as food stamps, where you pay with a preloaded card at a store. Critics of the migrant response and of this particular plan have raised concerns about the potential for this to be rife with fraud and waste and abuse. City officials say if it's fully expanded, it will actually save about $600,000 a month and give migrants more flexible food options. And on top of that, push money back into the local economy as opposed to some big food vendor contract.
Yeah, I want migrants to have more flexible food options.
So there's not going to be any waste, fraud, and abuse. No, of course not. We know how well the welfare programs are administered in this country. There's no trafficking in EBT cards or anything of the sort.
No,
so
no.
Sure. And it's all food and diapers. Of course it is. In addition to that, this is a way to infuse money into the local economy. I mean, this is just fascinating. And because people are economically illiterate, you know, as Nancy Pelosi famously said, welfare checks are stimulant. That's a way to stimulate the economy is transfer of wealth. The fundamental misunderstanding is so deep, I refuse to go back as far as I need to go back to try to get anybody who believes that up to speed. But regardless, the best part, of course, this is a savings. Spending $53 million is on people here illegally is saving New York City taxpayers money. Right. Ann Williams Isom is a deputy mayor. She provides further explanation.
Saving New Yorkers $600,000 a month is a smart thing to do.
Yay.
Saving New Yorkers $7.2 million a year is a smart thing to do. Making sure that we are decreasing waste is a smart thing to do. Making sure that we've put in guardrails so that people can only use it for food and baby supplies. So if you try to go to Bloomingdale's and use it for shoes, it will be rejected. If there are things that we see where people abuse it, we can take the card back.
That's good enough for me. And this is important to know because 3-2-1, it will start in Chicago in about 5 seconds.
Three,
we can guarantee
it. Yep, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. First, they're going to butter us up with, well, we're giving you your park districts back. And then, you know, they're going to do that. They're going to give them money while people are struggling, living paycheck to paycheck. People who have never lived paycheck to paycheck are for the first time in their lives. And I think they're getting sick of this, that if you illegally, if you break a law and come into this country, that we're going to pay for everything. I mean, Dan, the people that are in hotels are getting the linen changes. Like they put the sign out their door if they want their bed made or not.
Well, that's
or if they need new fresh towels. They get three meals a day. It's sickening.
What are you doing when you stay in a hotel?
Well, I do that if I need them changed, but I'm just saying that we're but I'm also paying $300 for that hotel room.
I understand, but what do you want the hotel staff to do? You want them to give them three floggings a day? I mean, what?
I don't know. I mean, you want them to maintain their jobs. That's a good point. But it's this is not how immigration process should work. My grandpa came here with a bag and $20 and a pack of cigarettes during the Depression and made do and didn't get any handouts at all from the government. Nothing. And made a life for himself, like I'm sure your ancestors did and everybody else's who did it the right way. So it's kind of like a slap in the face for people who are following the rules.
Well, here's the thing. These migrant debit card, the debit cards for migrants and these phony evictions. Oh, March 16th, we're getting serious. You can't stay forever, blah, blah, blah. And then they do the dance of the migrants and move them around to different places.
Right.
Again, with the pronouncements of we can handle, we need more federal help. The suburbs or other states have to pick up the slack here. That's all a lie. They want the Biden buddies and they're keeping them. Right? That's clear now to everybody. They want them and they're keeping them. The protestations, notwithstanding Greg Abbott's a heartless, he's playing politics with human lives and Ron DeSantis. So what their actual opinion is, thank you, Greg Abbott. And thank you, Ron DeSantis. I'm not saying that that means DeSantis and Abbott are playing into their hands. They're not. But I'm telling you what the mentality of these mayors are. Brandon, Baltimore's Brandon, New York's Eric, and so forth. LA's Karen. That they want them and they're keeping them. Got it? And of course, Eric Adams is keeping them because, you know, Eric Adams has this pat line he loves to use. New York City is the fill in the blank of America. New York City is the fill in the blank of America.
Everyone knows that New York City is the Athens of America.
It's the Istanbul of America.
It's the keys of America. It's the soul of America. We are the Tel Aviv of America.
New York City is the Islamabad of America.
The Zagreb of America.
We are the Lima of America. Lima.
New York City is Mexico City of America.
This is the Dudley of America.
New York City is soon to be the Mexico City of North America.
Oh, my God.
New York City is the Islamabad of America. Well, somebody better look for Bin Laden's associates, if that's true.
Dear Lord.
It's the Zagreb. It's the Lima. It's the, right? So this is their, they paper over this with this, like, melting pot, assimilation, Statue of Liberty, huddled masses nonsense. But what they're really just sanctioning is the recomposition of these cities to expand the dependency class, to prop up their political fortunes, and to ensure at the state level for presidential political purposes that they stop losing electoral votes because American citizens are fleeing. 3.7 million have moved from red to blue counties. They're going to continue to see their political power diminished and their relevance in presidential elections and diminished. And the Democrat Party can't have that.
And they need to fill the classrooms. I mean, they need to for CTU. And in New York, they have 30,000 new illegal students that are sitting down in those seats.
Right. Because state funding in Illinois, for example, is based on average daily attendance. So you can't have, you can only keep up the appearances of 200 kids in a high school for 1,500 kids for so long. So let's fill them up so we continue to get the cash that we need to finance our six-figure salaries and seven-figure guaranteed pensions. That's what this is about. Nothing else. Tom in Oswego.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. You know my situation trying to get my son-in-law here from Mexico to reunite with my daughter and grandson. But that's probably not going to happen because of all this chaos. I never hear the politicians talking about the long-term goal of all of this. In other words, they keep putting up shelters. A shelter is a temporary situation. What's long-term? They're not legal, so I can't employ them.
Well,
New York, they say it was $50 million to save $600,000. These people are demented, and pretty soon the system is going to collapse. I don't know when or what it's going to look like, but it's going to collapse.
Yeah, and when it collapses, all the better. Cloward Piven style. Not exactly how they envisioned it, but this is backdoor way in. When it collapses, then what's the response? More government.
And Dan, I have a new neighbor for you to meet. He's Venezuelan, and he choked a woman. Prosecutors say he choked a woman into unconsciousness, then sexually abused her at UIC campus. Then 3 hours later, he followed another woman from the Northwest Side CTA Blue Line and choked her during a robbery attempt.
And to that, I say Americans commit crime at higher rates than migrants, because that's the pat line you'll hear back from them.
Yeah.
You'll hear back from these mayors. And then they move on. And they hope the electorate does, too. And they probably will, despite their I don't approve of what's going on at the border. I don't like what's happening in my neighborhood. So I'm going to vote for a different Democrat. Oh, that's a real solution.
I mean, after the woman passed out, he flipped her onto her stomach, climbed on her back, stole her jewelry, touched her bare buttocks and private areas with his hands and fingers. Well, is this a real stand-up guy?
So to Tom from Oswego's question, what happens? Oh, this is temporary. No, it's not temporary. It's temporary for now as they start to figure out where else they can move people around and what they can do. Oh, you can't hire them because they're in this country illegally? Hilarious. hilarious. Of course you can hire them. And not to mention, how many work visas did the Biden administration grant to Venezuelan migrants? 285,000?
Right.
They're going to be normalized. They're going to be housed. They're going to be employed, or they're already employed by cartels and human trafficking operations, and they'll just add to the general street crime and violent crime in places like Chicago, New York. That they're staying.
Right. And according to Alderman Lopez, because he sent out an email blast, about 2,000 have already received Social Security numbers.
Those thousands of migrants could be released en masse onto the streets in days. Local governments and nonprofits in the region have long worked with U.S. border officials to take migrants to states, to a site such as Casa Elitas, a Catholic-run shelter for migrants in Tucson, or the Regional Center for Border Health in Yuma. FEMA disperses funds from the Shelters and Services Program to entities providing shelter, food, transportation, and support to people who have been processed and released from custody while awaiting the outcome of immigration proceedings. But the federal funding runs out on March 31st. So when the federal funding runs out, unless there's more funny money printed up and distributed, then you'll have these nonprofits just turn them out. And then it's the local governments that will intervene, or other nonprofits, or what have you. Regardless, whether it's the Fed that comes in, or the Fed that funds nonprofits that come in, or the Fed, state, city, county, as we have in Illinois, they are going to find a way to keep Biden's buddies here. That's their priority. You are not their priority. Your issues at the grocery store, or with anything else going on in your lives, is secondary to keeping our new friends here, our new friends that will provide the basis for our ongoing political power. That's the priority. We talked to Mark Lennon about this yesterday. He estimating $6 billion has been spent between the city and the state in Illinois on migrants just since this uptick over the last year, really. $6 billion. You know, 13% of Illinois state budget, to put it in some sort of context. It's a pretty big number. Does anybody care? Do you see some political sea change coming in Illinois? You see a big Republican sweep coming in the suburbs this cycle? Right. Jerry in Milwaukee.
Yeah, good morning, Dan and Amy. Let's not forget about all the medical expenses that we have to pick up because of these illegals. I mean, I understand it's in excess of $500 billion that, that they're not paying, and we're going to have to pick up in hospital costs, yeah. And all
yes,
those other
right.
Things.
Medicaid, which is a federal state program. That's right. Thanks for the call, Jerry. So, right, you can extrapolate from Illinois or from the states that have the most migrants. So look at big city America. And big city America, you know, for all the talk about, we send more money than we get and this and that. We're the economic engine of Northeast Illinois, and the economic engine of New York City, and the economic engine of California, or economic engine, since they have a couple of major metropolitan areas. Yeah, they're the source of the sucking chest wounds in these states. They're the source of the cultural rot. They're the source of the lawlessness, and it radiates out from them, and they socialize their problems to entire regions, if not entire states. And the responses from the electorates in those states? Stay the course. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The Purple People Beaters are back at it, SEIU. They're Chicago Park District employees. I'm talking about SEIU's employees because they're their employees. They're not the taxpayer. You know, they don't work for you. They work for SEIU. They just happen to have jobs at the Chicago Park District. Well, they voted to strike. 2,200 Park District workers seek competitive pay increases, a $20 hour minimum wage, of course, health insurance for every worker, and more full-time positions. Well, they need more pay and more staff to keep up with all the programs for the migrants.
I mean, are you kidding me? They've been doing nothing. They had, think of like Gage Park, they had 1,200 programs that were put on hold. What were they doing during that entire time? There were 800 at Broadway Armory that were put on hold.
Over the past 5 years, Chicago has seen, this is from their press release.
Okay.
Talk about hoisting yourself by your own petard. Over the last 5 years, Chicagoans have seen a decline in park programming since the cancellation of swim lessons for summer camp kids, 30% fewer activities available to our communities, and a 50% increase in wait lists to join programs. We need raises. We're cutting services, but we need raises and health care. Oh, and yeah, hire some more, because the SEIU needs more voters, too, and precinct workers.
And people to pay dues.
The Park District said its programming and available workforce is limited due to safety protocols during the pandemic. Oh, right. The COVIDian protocols that you embrace now are the excuse to explain the reduction in programming, and as well as on the employer side and the strike on the employee side. I love it. It's a great scam. Great scam. But as programming returned, the Park District still limited swim class sizes in the interest of public safety.
What? I mean, drowning, yes, but the interest of public safety. I mean, remember Dr. Ezekiel? She's like, oh, fecal spray in pools. I hate pools. And then every pool was shut down because she personally doesn't like pools.
The good news is that SAU is continuing to negotiate in good faith. Do they ever not? And they're calling on BLM Brandon to intervene. Of course they are.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wonder which on whose side he'll intervene. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Park District, the 2,200 strong, the Chicago Park District, giving you the quality programming that you're not getting at exorbitant prices. 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. I'll tell you what I suspect is one of the problems with the Park District, too, though SEIU was very generous in not saying it.
What?
Whiteness.
You
know, like all these MAGA voters that defeated the transfer tax increase referendum.
Yeah, I was one of them. Yes, thank you. 38,000 strong are we. Yes, thank you.
They're also sort of a plague on Park District programming, I'm just assuming. And I like what this school district in St. Louis Park, Minnesota is doing.
What?
And I think we should become a little bit more fashion forward in this effort to eradicate whiteness. You know, the DEI is very sanitized. Let's call it what it is. Let's strip away the veneer, shall we? The school district, that St. Louis Park School District in Minnesota, has posted a job. And this is a good paying job, too.
Okay.
Which is the kind of jobs that you would want at the Chicago Park District. I mean, I think this would be appropriate, because as SEIU Park District employees were saying that, you know, it's getting too expensive to live in the city. St. Louis Park District is hiring an assistant superintendent to examine the presence of whiteness in the district. The superintendent there will assistant superintendent gig pays between $134,000 and $201,000.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you need an expert.
Forget my bagging at Walmart. I'm going to go there.
Yeah. Well, whiteness is a big problem. I don't know what the chances are they're going to hire a honky for that as examination and rooting out of whiteness, but it's definitely something to look at. Seems like test scores aren't where they need to be in terms of reading and math proficiencies. Gosh, that has a familiar ring to it. And so, understandably, the school district concluded that whiteness is the problem, so they're hiring a poor person devoted to examining the presence of said whiteness so that said whiteness can be eliminated from said school district. And I just think if we did the same thing with the Park District, maybe we could free up a few spaces in those swim classes, get programming back online, You need that because it's just this this overhang to everything, whiteness, and government has to lead the way. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. And I say this, too, because, of course, you know, SEIU is going to play racial politics the same way that BLM Brandon does, and they'll probably play it together. And if you don't acquiesce to their demands, then you're going to be on Team Racism. And who wants to be on that team? Right?
Exactly, yeah. It's a ballsy move after they've been dormant for, what, has it been 8 months since we've had access to anything that we've been paying taxes for?
I don't know. Not much of a fan of Park District programming, although I am a honky.
I use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but I know we talked to that woman from Gage Park the other week, and she was talking about the Park District facilities that she mm-hmm. can't access. So I know there are people that do use it, and I understand. They paid for those facilities. It seems to follow logically that they should be able to use them, but
yeah, that makes sense.
But only on terms that are agreeable to SEIU and to the migrants. That's what I say. Robert in Bloomingdale, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey guys, how you doing today? The reason I was calling is it's just ridiculous. You got joke unions like SEIU running the state of Illinois, the teachers' unions running the city of Chicago and everything else. These people own in the park districts and so forth should be fortunate they have a job with a good pension that other people in private sector don't. What do you think?
I think you're being very uncharitable. Thanks for the call, Robert, to our public sector union heroes. Those on the front line providing the swim lessons that you won't provide to your kids. Those on the front line unlocking the door to the gym so people can play basketball.
I mean, it's a heroic, valiant job that they have.
Everyday
to
heroes.
To lean in there and get that key in that and just, no. But there are some Park District employees that I love that, you know, because we've been using the Park District for everything you can imagine, from summer school or summer camp is a big thing because it's affordable and the counselors were great. But they've been
Do they examine whiteness in those summer camps at all?
Not back then. It wasn't a thing back then.
Well, you know, you may or may not get Park District spaces back staffed, maybe not fully, since programs appear to be cut per SEIU. But, you know, it's going to be on their timeline and at their price point.
I mean, it's so sad because we finally get our public spaces back. Finally. Well, we're supposed to. The eviction is allegedly, Dan, going to begin this Saturday.
Yeah.
So sure. We'll see where they take those 300 men that are at Gage Park and the, I think, close to 500 people that are at Broadway Armory. I'll be curious to see if any news crews are out there to watch them leave and see where they go. I mean, they might just go back to the landing zone and they be sheltered somewhere else.
Maybe it's time to finally bring the Pritzker Hotels online as a way station. I don't want to forget about that opportunity for Pritzker to live his values. By the way, also, just on this whole examining whiteness thing, looking for it, finding it everywhere, rooting it out, DEI, because that's what this is, you know, the dye, DEI dye that kills,
right?
Literally. The UK looked at this recently, just to give you an example, because, by the way, this, of course, is rotten in the private sector, too, which is why sort of nobody can see their way fit to behave sensibly. There's not a stakeholder group in Chicago that can see its way to behave sensibly and to promote common sense and to say this identitarian political hustle is killing the city. All aspects, public and private. But there's not a single stakeholder group can bring themselves to say that. Pick one. The church, the business community, particularly corporate, the schools, public and private, the park district, the library. I mean, pick an institution, any institution. Pick a stakeholder group, any stakeholder group. So anyway, the UK looked at this. And they can't figure out how to even measure whether DEI is having any positive impact or not. What they can measure is that companies spend about $8 billion a year on DEI training. In five years to 2020 that they looked at this, 15 to 20, the number of people with the job title head of diversity more than doubled. Taxpayers are spending £550 million a year on 10,000 government jobs related to DEI. I think Chicago might have Britain beat. Those are big numbers. And there's a backlash that has started, but I mean, it is really a blip compared to what has been allowed to run wild. I mean, this is you know, teaspoon in the Titanic type stuff at this point. I guess, you know, Britain deserves some credit for saying, you know, this is all very amorphous. It's difficult to compare different workplaces in terms of understanding what kind of impact this training has. I can tell you what kind of impact the training has. Zero to negative.
Right.
Depending on the strength of your workplace in the leadership of your company. But everybody is going along. Most everybody, not everybody. Most everybody is going along. And, that's a problem. And Chicago is, the quintessential example of it, public and private. Paul and Carrie.
So bear with me, Dan. How, in fact, do we fight this? I mean, for example, Carrie here, and Carrie, in the primary, we recently voted down a referendum, thank God, for home rule within Carrie. And one lady's arguments, for example, on social was, well, it's going to be a cut in our programs. My husband, this is what she said, my husband's not going to have a job. And, of course, he worked for the city of Cary. So, I mean, every day we talk about this, and with my algorithms on the Internet, they feed me a plethora of all the things that I want to hear about how bad things are with the migrants and the way people continue to vote in Chicago and states like Illinois. Okay, other than saying, well, you have to vote in November and call your state representative. What are we to do? What are we to do? I mean, I'd be interested in hearing.
Well, Paul and Carrie, thanks for the call. I mean, you know, you're in a small community. You can't organize in a small community that I think leans conservative, certainly maybe if not politically in terms of lifestyle. You're in a small community that leans conservative, and we don't know how to organize to say to oppose a referendum, which people apparently reflexively did, as you just said, and defeated. Mm-hmm. So that tells you there's something out there that people sort of get it. You can't organize to win a municipal race? Really? I did this event with John Cass down at a club in Naples with a bunch of Chicago expats. Some are probably still residents. Most are not, but they go back to Chicago. They're all from Chicago. It's 250 people in this room, and these are successful people, well-heeled people. So their loss, their exit from Chicagoland is a real loss.
Oh, yeah.
And I know people are, you know, people on the left are blithe to this occurrence, but whatever. But, you know, it's the same thing. They say, well, what can, you know, these are people with means and so forth. So I said, well, one thing you can all do, even from Southwest Florida, get control of your alma mater. Where'd you go to high school? Get control of it. The way that that former CEO of Morgan Stanley sent that letter to Loyola Academy saying, our family is no longer donating to Loyola Academy as long as you're on this woke die train to hell. You know, paraphrasing what he wrote, obviously. So why, you know, a lot of you or your kids went to private schools. Many went to public schools in wealthier areas. Don't tell me you can't get control of your school. Don't tell me you don't have the juice or you don't have the connections to a community you spent your lives in and your kids went to school there to get control of your school. Just get control of your school. One thing. You don't have to run for office. You don't have to stand up a pack. You don't have to write a $10 million check for some gubernatorial candidate. Just get control of the school that you were involved in for, in many cases, generations. You can't do that? Yeah, you can. Stop trying to save the world. You're trying to get Trump across the finish line. You're not going to. He's going to get across the finish line with or without you, certainly in Illinois. I mean, that's fine to be, you know, engaged in all of that, of course. But you want to present a successful model that people can replicate. You want people to say, do you see what the folks in Cary did? You want people to say, do you see what the folks at ABC Elementary did or XYZ High School? That is eminently achievable. It's right there. You know it. You don't need outside interlopers to tell you who's who and what to do. So do it. Mary Midway.
Oh, I know. I look at the property taxes, and first you see the gigantic amount they take for teachers. Well, they're not teaching our kids. Then you see how much they take out for the police. God bless the police, but I hear more and more stories about you call 911, you might be on your own, or they might come in a two-hour amount of time. It's not like it used to be. And now here we are with the park districts, which is not news to me since the beginning of lockdown. All the ones by me have been closed. Olympic-sized pools not open. And to answer Amy's question, what are they doing there? I'll tell you, they're collecting a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Mary. Yeah. And you know what, Mary? That paycheck needs to be bigger.
Yes. Now.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Got a text from a friend. Park District also responsible for maintaining the parks themselves, which I can attest to being a mess. Pre-COVID, Lincoln Park had an army of landscaping crews who weeded, edged, pruned, etc. Now it's overrun with weeds, leaves that were never raked in the fall, clogging sewers and gutters, and all manner of trash. Maybe put the illegals to work. You can put them to work, but you got to pay them $20 an hour, living wage, and provide health care.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So about the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge after it was hit by a container ship. I thought it was interesting. Baltimore has a BLM Brandon, too. His name is Brandon Scott. Interchangeable. If he was the mayor of Chicago, you wouldn't notice a difference.
Nope, not at all.
Same rap, same program. This was his admonition to CNN yesterday.
I'm going to be the first to ask that CNN and everyone else stop showing the video. No one needs to see a possibility of their family member being severely injured or otherwise over and over and over again because it's just traumatizing our community.
Yeah, I mean, it's a terrible thing that occurred, but Baltimore is traumatized on a daily basis because of the policies of politicians like BLM Brandon Scott. And actually, it is useful to see the video, not because there's lack of concern for the victims, the missing construction workers and so forth, but because you want to understand what happened and you want to bump up the official story against what you're seeing because you can't trust government or the D.C. press corps. So I thought it was interesting because I know there are some conspiracy theories abounding that this was a strategic attack. Laura Logan is perpetuating one of them. But what you can see is the power going on and off on that container ship as it's backing out of the port and towards that stanchion that it ultimately hit, taking down the bridge. And the reporting is, can be fact-checked and challenged, but at least let's understand what makes sense based on what we see and what we know. The reporting is that there was a mayday call, they lost power, and that resulted in the bridge being closed so there wasn't more traffic on the bridge than there was. There was cars, you know, that on the bridge after it was closed, at least on one side. But that actually the ship's captain and personnel acted heroically given the exigencies of the circumstances.
Right. So this was not a terrorist attack. I mean, I had somebody, one of my dear friends, write me yesterday saying this is, you know, to deflect from P. Diddy. I'm like, oh, my God, it is not
from
at
P. Diddy.
All.
Oh, that's interesting.
The P. Diddy scandal. I'm like, no, no. You can see the lights going on and off. They lost hydraulics. They made the Mayday call. And thank God for those police officers who jumped into action, excuse me, and got those vehicles off the bridge. And I just wish that pothole repair crew could have, you know, gotten the same warning and got out, because you can see their, you know, them going into the water. It's just awful. But six are still missing. One is in the hospital, and the other one just brushed his clothes off, and he said he wants to see his family. He was shaken a little bit, but nothing major, and he said the good Lord was on his side. And that's what he told the first responders, and then he left the scene.
Okay, well, Laura Logan tweeted about this. I mean, she can raise these issues, and they can be addressed. But she's saying that this was a strategic, and I think she was saying this yesterday on Bannon's War Room podcast, a brilliant strategic attack, multiple intel sources, she cites. Absolutely brilliant strategic attack in U.S. critical infrastructure, most likely cyber, and our intel agencies know it. She said, yeah, I mean, the two critical components on the bridge are the two load-bearing pylons on each end, closest to the shore. Those are bigger, thicker, and deeper than anything else. These are the anchor points, and they knew that hitting either one of them would be a fatal wound to the integrity of the bridge. She goes on to say, there should have been a harbor pilot to pilot the boat. You're not supposed to traverse any obstacles without the harbor pilot. They chose a full moon so there would be maximum tidal shift, rise and fall. Brisk flow in that river on a normal day, and have had a lot of rain recently, so water is already moving along at a good pace. All these factors, and she goes on, but all these factors, when you look at it, this is how you teach people how to do this type of attack, and there are so few people left in the system who know this. We have a junior varsity team on the field. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then she goes into the discussion that, I mean, has been raised about the delay in global commerce, both in terms of shipping as well as in truck traffic that traverses the Francis Scott Key Bridge. For every $100 that goes into the city, $12 comes from shipping. Believe this will cripple the city of Baltimore at a time when they do not have the resources to cover. Well, right. Baltimore is one of the worst governed and most violent mm-hmm. cities in America. That predates this. So the striking at this by some unnamed entity in order to temporarily disrupt international commerce based on what we actually know seems a bit far-fetched to me. 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 646-36DA, turnkey.protextline. Yeah, that just does not add up. Occam's razor on these things, mm-hmm. the simplest explanation that contemplates the particular variables. What was said, you're fine to question the official story, fine. But what was said and what you see with the power going on and off, sounds a lot closer to the mark than any of these ginned up theories about some very sophisticated attack. And then you add in that our intel agencies knew or should have known about this and so on and so forth. It gets a little Jean Le Carré spy novel-ish for me. I don't know about you.
Right. And what terrorists make a Mayday call? You know, I mean, if they were true, you know, down the bridge, they wouldn't warn people, Mayday, we lost power on the ship.
Well, wait a second. So let's just understand what the assertion is. The assertion is not that the crew on the ship were the terrorists, is that it was an attack that took control of the ship to move it into the pylon that knocked out and brought down the bridge. The big guy, Mr. 10%, Joe Biden, he weighed in on this too, because he has great affinity for that bridge.
At about 1:30, container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which I've been over many, many times commuting from the state of Delaware, either by train or by car.
By train? Train?
Yeah.
There's no train there.
I think he's remembering his time on Ozzy Osbourne's Crazy Train because, there are no train tracks there, but he remembers it fondly.
Yes.
And that's the important thing. Frank, Board of Trade, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Laura Logan, early onset dementia. And Amy, lose that P. Diddy woman's number.
Okay. No, I'm not going to. She later said maybe I jumped the gun a little bit. I'm like, you think? But I got to tell you about my girl, Laura Logan. I think that, the last two times I've seen her, and I know we did an event with her a few years back, she's not the same person that she used to be. There's something going on there.
Yeah, I think, I can't recall offhand. I'd have to go back and look it up, but I'm not that interested. But there's been a couple of instances of sort of foundation-free conspiracy theorizing.
Oh yeah, like sucking blood out of kids so that you can look younger, and it's just that the Democrats.
I don't recall that one.
Oh, I do. But that the Democrats were kidnapping children and then we were stealing their blood, so that is a form of regaining your youth with blood transfusions. And then last time I saw her, she did not look good. It was not. I'm not a doctor, and I'm not going to say somebody has something that I don't know, but I'll just say that I don't think she's well.
Well, I don't know, but to go with a theory like that, without any sort of evidentiary basis other than the proverbial multiple anonymous intel sources. I don't know. It's sort of like it reminds me of Putin saying Ukraine is responsible for the Moscow concert attack. It's like, but it's awfully convenient. And you're going to have to put some pieces together for me that I can logically follow or point me in a direction. And I'm not really picking up what Laura Logan is laying down. Anyway, we do live in an accident-prone world, right? Accidents do happen. We do live in a world where there is rank incompetence, particularly at the highest levels of government and the highest levels of corporate America. So you want to factor that in, too. All these people that we generally wouldn't trust to babysit our kids, but they are so uber-competent that they can put together these Rube Goldberg conspiracies that no one can ever figure out. We figured out a lot of nefarious activity at the hands of government and corporate chieftains and so forth. I'm sure there are some that have gotten by the goalie, but I don't think so. By the way, what it's really distracting attention from, and I don't mean this in a conspiratorial way, I just mean that this is where a lot of attention, Baltimore's attention, should be on in addition to the rescue effort. The police shortage in Baltimore. Here we go again. We brought you the story the other week about Pittsburgh. No police precincts open between 3 a.m. and 7 a.m. in the morning. And you've got a handful of officers covering the entire city. Well, Baltimore has a similar issue.
In the Southern District on Tuesday, there was a plea for officers to work overtime. Minutes later, it went citywide. Baltimore Southern Police District is the city's largest district, 61,000 residents. And on Tuesday afternoon, sources tell us at one point there were three police officers on patrol. Just seconds after the plea for officers hit the airwaves, so did pleas for help.
If anyone in Sector 2 can come clear, we have a physical child abuse at Morrill Park, and there's a 10-year-old at the location with bruises all over his body. Okay, we also have a common assault. We have a missing person, 2640 D. Street.
10 minutes after that child abuse call was transmitted, it appears there were still no officers en route.
We still have physical child abuse.
Yes, sir. And be advised, we are now holding 10 calls. No priority ones. We still have the physical child abuse and the common assault.
Baltimore has a murder per capita rate that is, I believe, second highest in the nation behind only Memphis. Ever since a previous mayor and the Freddie Gray prosecution and the previous mayor that wanted Stephanie Rawlings Blake, was that her name? I think
yes.
So. Created a safe space for rioters. You know, and this doesn't even include what happened during the George Floyd Summer of Love 2020. I mean, Baltimore has always had problems, but now it's just completely circling the drain. And three officers for an area of 61,000 people in the heart of Baltimore with the kind of endemic violent crime problem it has. You want to pay attention to Baltimore because of this bridge collapse. Sure, that's understandable. But I would use the opportunity to include a little conversation about public safety generally, not on the waterways, but on the streets of Baltimore. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Last week, Tommy Tuberville, Republican of Alabama, former Auburn football coach, you'll recall, he forced a vote on an amendment that would protect female athletes by keeping men out of women's sports. And all 51 Democrat socialists voted against it. Talk about a dividing line. Sage Steele, a former ESPN anchor who stood up to ESPN and Disney over COVID mandates and is also standing up for women in women's sports, like Riley Gaines style, took to the social media the kids are so enthralled with and had this to say.
All right, I have to get this off my chest. Friday night, middle of the night, there was an amendment called the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act that was presented on the Senate floor. Help me understand why all 51 Democrats voted to block this amendment from even being voted on. Help me understand why all 51 Democrats apparently unanimously feel that it's okay for men to play women's sports. No excuse. I don't understand. And I think it's time to call people out on it. So I have a list of names that stood out to me, women, senators who voted to not even allow this amendment to be considered. Number one, from Massachusetts, Senator Elizabeth Warren. Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota. From Nevada, Senator Jackie Rosen. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York. Senator Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin. And how about Senator Mazie Hirono from Hawaii, actually blocking it twice now from even coming to a vote? Remember, these are mothers. These are grandmothers. These are aunties. These are feminists. Isn't that what they call themselves? These are feminists who are saying, no, these young women and girls are not worth fighting for. They're not worth protecting. They're saying that by blocking this vote. This should not be political, but every single Democrat voting thinks it's okay for men to play women's sports. It should not be political. It is shameful. And these people and others need to be called out.
And Sage Steele is just the gal to do it. I love it.
Yeah. And
good
she was wearing it. And she was wearing an XXXY hat, which is the new clothing line from our good friend Jennifer Say. And Riley Gaines is involved in that, too. So good for her. Call them out. Don't stop.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the big guy, Mr. 10%, President Biden on the campaign trail, he has an ask of you, America.
Folks, if America sends me a Congress that are Democrats.
What?
For America sends me a Congress that are Democrats. I think he's asking for you to send him more Democrats to Congress, but it's got a little jumbled on the teleprompter, so, or in his brain, one of the two. So please consider his plea. Also, since we're in the business of trying to be fair-minded when it comes to the less than able-minded, the Bidenflation you've heard so much about, not really Bidenflation. It's not really Biden policies and Fed policies. No. It's something more fundamental. It's something that Joe Biden has devoted his administration to fighting as he transforms our economy so heroically. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Steve Moore, Govzilla author and economist. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, great to be with you guys, Dan and Amy. Favorite part of my week. And yes, thank you for reminding us that it is not Biden's massive spending policies at all that caused the inflation. It's a much more fundamental problem.
And tell us what that problem is.
Well, it's climate change.
Yeah,
did you know
climate
that?
Inflation.
Hey, it's climate change. Climate change is what caused our inflation. And I people probably think I'm just joking, but there is a scientific study that was in a scientific journal that says that the reason that prices are rising for things like groceries is because the climate is changing, right? And it wasn't changing before Biden came into office. It started when Biden came into office. And the claim they make, I mean, if I sound like I'm joking, I'm not joking, but it is a joke. The authors of this study say that that what's happening is that the warming of the planet is reducing food production. And, you know, if you have a reduction in production, then the price of something's going to go up. But I think most people in sixth grade science understand that if the planet is slightly warming, which it has slightly warmed over the last number of decades, then that means more food production, not less food production, because, of course, plants and vegetation grow more in warm weather than they do in cold weather.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one theory. Yeah, that's one theory. It's what the reality is one theory, and then there's this other idea. No, it's certainly.
But hold on, Jim. I mean, let me just say this. It's one thing. You have like a dingbat, you know, obviously a dingbat, ideological scientist who came up with this idiotic study. That's fine. You know, there are a lot of stupid people out there, and you know, even with PhDs. And so he publishes this idiotic study saying the warming of the planet is causing food production to go down. And then that's one thing. But then you have a scientific journal, a peer-reviewed journal, that actually publishes this piece of garbage. And then you have Axios, which is, for those who follow politics, kind of it has a lot of subscribers. It's a political newsletter. And they actually
On the left, political newsletter on the left.
They pretend that they're, you know, down the middle, but they do lean left. But I mean,
lean.
Why would they report on something that's so crazy?
Yeah. Well, why would they? Because they don't lean left. They are left, and they're in charge of promulgating the official story on things like climate change. And then tomorrow, the follow up will be, you know, Joe Biden, you know, heroically shuts down, carbon emissions on farms like the EU is doing, which is actually what is imperiling food production the world over. But, you know, I digress.
Yeah. Well, look, I think the big story on climate change right now is I got to tell you, people are so angry about these new EV mandates. I mean, and I'm sick and tired of reading the, you know, there's a New York Times headline the other day that said, don't worry, you know, the new environmental mandates by the Biden administration, they will not take your car away. Oh, yes, they will. Yes, they will. The whole intention of this is to require people to buy electric vehicles. And, you know, what's going to happen is people are going to start hoarding electric vehicles before they're banned from the roads.
I was dutifully reading your Unleash Prosperity newsletter, as I do.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get your take on something, too, because you tackle this issue. I saw the editorial in The Wall Street Journal about, quote unquote, conservatives talking about the Biden head of the FTC, who's a bit of a monopoly buster. At least that's how she presents herself, this Ms. Khan does. Yeah, but she has sort of support from some erstwhile conservatives like Matt Gaetz because she's going after big business. So, I mean, this is a situation of strange bedfellows. But are they going in the right direction?
No, the worst law, one of the worst laws that was ever promulgated in the United States was the Sherman Antitrust Act. That was back in about 100 years ago. And it's based on a myth. And if I may, I want people to understand this because that one of the myths that all school children are learning today, and it's been happening for 30, 40 years, is the myth of the robber baron, that people like Henry Ford and Andrew Carnegie and J.P. Morgan and, you know, the John D. Rockefeller were greedy, you know, monopolists that hurt the poor. Wait a minute. These are the people who built America. These are the people. And by the way, everything from car prices to steel prices to financial service prices to the railroad prices, all of those fell because of these incredible, capitalists. And that's not a derogatory term. They built this country, and they made all these products, like Henry Ford made the automobile affordable to middle-class Americans. And the same thing with steel, the financial services. So how in the world are these people monopolists and robber barons when they did more to build the middle class in this country? And that's still true today. I mean, I see that one of the cases they're bringing, this Lena Khan, by the way, she's a very smart lady. She's, I think, 38 years old. She's never worked a day in her life. She's been a university professor. And she's telling businesses, Dan, how to run their business when she's never even worked in the private sector, let alone run a business. And so now the latest is they're going after the Apple iPhone. Did you know, Amy, that the iPhone is a monopoly?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah. Well, this has long been Krakajewia's hobby horse, right? You have to choose the apps or the phones, and this. I mean, yep. She's been railing on about that for years, and now she's got Lena Khan to do her bidding.
Yeah, and so what's happening here? I mean, look. First of all, there's a lot of competition. And do you remember, I mean, Dan, you and I are a little older than Amy, but you remember the first cell phone was like the Motorola cell. I think those were even made in Illinois. And, had many, many generations of cell phones now. The first cell phones, which came out, about 35, 40 years ago, those were like a brick.
I still have all my cell phones. I have that, then the flip phone, and then the one where you pulled the antenna up. And yeah, the first cell phone call was made in Chicago suburbs.
How about even more recently, the BlackBerry? You know,
there's
a good movie about that, actually, The Rise and Fall. Yeah,
that was a great movie. I love that movie.
Yeah, by the way, I still have a drawer full of BlackBerries because I love the keyboard on the BlackBerry. Like most people, I do have an iPhone, but I don't like the. I'm always misspelling things because I can't do the typing that well. And I love the BlackBerry. But, you know, my point is you've seen so many generations of cell phones. They used to cost $3,000. Now you can get an iPhone for, I don't know what they cost now, $200. But they're much, you know, they provide much better service. What's that?
$200, $600 maybe for an iPhone.
$1,000.
Okay.
Well, the new iPhone 15?
Well, yeah. It depends on what, you know, model.
Well, I get Steve Moore still has the flip phone. That's why he hasn't updated his pricing. So let me play devil's advocate. By the way, since you brought up Robber Barons, a great book by Burton Folsom called The Myth of the Robber Barons.
Book.
Yeah, if anybody wants to check that out.
After
they're done watching the BlackBerry movie. What?
Yeah, kids are learning this day after day for the last 50 years that these people who are great empire builders and made America great are the villains of the story.
No, I get it. I get it. But so let me put this to you, though, too. I want you to explain this to conservatives. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And if we can use Lena Khan as a blunt instrument to get at these noxious big tech companies that are manipulating elections and addicting teenagers to destructive social media platforms, then why not?
Because I believe in freedom of choice, and if you believe that that as Google and Facebook and all these others are against conservatives and they're discriminating against you and taking you down, then you have a good option. Just turn the damn thing off. Don't use it. You know, nobody's putting a gun to your head and saying you have to use Google or you have to use Facebook or you have to use, Instagram or whatever these are. And do they discriminate against conservatives? Yes, they do. And I know a lot of your listeners are probably angry about that tech firm. So my point of view is, they built, by the way, Google built its platform. It should be able to put whatever it wants on its platform. Apple should be able to put whatever apps it wants. Why should the government tell Apple, a private company, what they have to put on their phone? I mean, how the, it's just, it's a violation of their private property rights. Don't we believe in that, Dan?
I hear you. I just wanted you to explain it because, you know, sometimes we forget. We fall into the trap of the other side to say, well, I want to get to my enemy by any means necessary. And you set precedents that you regret. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
What they're forgetting, Dan, is that the enemy, the biggest enemy, is big government. I mean, I regard big, because the big government can take away things. Nobody can force me at Apple to do anything. But you know what? The government can.
Right. Speaking of monopolies, the monopoly of force is where we should be focused. I agree. We mentioned this earlier
By the way, you know what the worst monopoly in the United States is?
What? Ma Bell.
Ma
no.
Bell. Talk about dating yourself. Yeah.
They got rid of that monopoly.
I know. Oh, I remember that.
What am I talking about, Dan? Come on. What's the most vicious,
government,
violent, destructive? What part of government?
The Fed.
No.
Oh.
The public school system is a monopoly.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say
but destroying our children.
The Department of Education.
I want to see Lena Khan go after the public school monopoly, which is spending twice as much as they should, and not educating our kids. Let's have total freedom in education. That's what I'm for.
Well, I agree with that. Speaking of people making choices, I mentioned this earlier in the show, but we'll get a little distillation from you on it. Since Joe Biden took office, 3.7 million Americans have moved from counties that went for Joe Biden to counties that went for Donald Trump. That's something.
Yeah, and guess what? One of the big counties that's losing population is Cook County. And, you know, people are moving away from big blue cities that are just so mismanaged and you know, because of the crime, the taxes, the all of these things. And so they're moving to, you know, look at people moving to Texas, Florida, that all these counties, especially in the South. And, you know, one other quick thing, you know, because I know we're running out of time. One of the big stories of America was after the Civil War for the next 100 years or so, black Americans moved out of the South, which was racist, and moved where? To cities like Chicago and Detroit and Milwaukee. And so you have, that was the Great Migration. Guess what's happening now? Blacks are leaving the northern cities and they're moving back to the South. And by the way, I thought the South was a racist region. I thought they hated minorities.
Right. Yes. The great migration in reverse, which is absolutely. Nothing is more of an indictment.
Who are the biggest victims of all these progressive policies? Like, well, we're not going to fight crime and we're going to raise taxes. It's minority Americans and poor Americans who are the victims of these stupid policies that you're putting in place in Chicago. I'm so sick of these, you know, upper class, you know, my liberal upper class brothers. Oh, we do this to help the poor. You're not helping the poor.
Steve Moore, GovZilla author and economist. Steve, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys, have a great week. Take care. Happy Easter. Bye.
Thanks. You too, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, have you seen the new NFL kickoff?
Yeah, I heard about it. I'm trying to visualize it, but I haven't. Did they demonstrate what it's going to be?
Yeah. So, the kicking team still kicks from their own 30-yard line.
Okay.
And the receiving team, you know, you still got a guy back by the end zone, but then the kickoff team's coverage team is at the 35 of the receiving team. And the receiving team's blocking line is one line at the 30-yard line. So you've only got about so you've got 5 yards between the kickoff team and the receiving team in terms of the blockers and the tacklers. And then you've only got about 30 yards between the kickoff coverage team and the kick returner. So this is obviously all to minimize collisions on kickoffs.
Right.
I mean, it's just
changing the rules again. Once again,
I think it's lame. I mean, the quarterback rule, that the head touching stuff, it's bad enough. It's bad enough in March Madness. You see it in March Madness with these forever reviews of potential flag or unfouls in case somebody brushes another player's hair. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's totally taking something away from the game. And with respect to football, I mean, you might as well, as people predicted, just go to flag football at this point.
Don't fix what's not broken.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Interesting piece in Boston Magazine about a poli-sci professor named Aiden Hirsch at Tufts University, who took it upon himself to construct a class for his students. He's a popular professor there. To construct a class for students at Tufts on modern conservative thought. He ran this by the poli-sci department. They okayed it. They just said one thing to him, said, well, you're going to have to build this course from scratch because we don't know of any course like this in American colleges, universities today. No, of course you don't. And interestingly, Hirsch, who's probably center right, does not include any sort of opposing viewpoints. I mean, he's focused on conservative thought, the conservative movement and conservative thought associated with that movement in a modern context. Maybe say my guess is from reading this piece is maybe say like Bill Buckley's founding of National Review forward to present. And so he builds the class around sort of the controversial issues of the day in that context. But you can get the opposing viewpoints everywhere else. So he just focuses on the viewpoints that the kids have not been exposed to, which I think makes a lot of sense. The author who effectively audited the class for a few months to see how this proceeded. Outside of class, when I asked some students their top concerns, few mentioned traditionally liberal topics like climate change, the global rise of authoritarian governments, or supporting working people. Instead, they uniformly tell me they've arrived at Tufts with laser-like concern over rights, gay rights, trans rights, abortion rights. They believe more explicit rights will protect oppressed classes, which would go a long way toward making the United States a safer place for all people. So this is what you're dealing with. To borrow from Rush, minds full of mush. That's what this is. That's even at Tufts, which is a reputedly prestigious university. They have been trained to look at everything through the prism of oppressed versus oppressor. It's hard to shake them, but when you start having to confront the intellectual heft of, say, a Glenn Lowry, our friend, the econ professor at Brown University, and his essay on the case for black patriotism, well, then now you got to get your wheels turning a little bit. Let's just see how strong those muscles between your ears really are. And it's interesting because the author of the piece, who is pretty clearly sympathetic to where the undergrads at Tufts start, meaning all this manufactured rights business through the oppressed oppressor lens, basically comes to the conclusion, well, let me read his concluding paragraph. He writes, is Hirsch planting the seeds of a new liberalism, an ideology that is more concerned with positive outcomes than righting historical wrongs? Significantly, this new liberalism could take hold if younger people are given access to a full range of ideologies and perspectives. In other words, maybe, just maybe, Hirsch is onto something. And it's amazing to me because this is like a 2,000-word think piece for Boston Magazine, you know, as you would expect from an outlet like this. The headline is A Radical Experiment at Tufts. And what's called a radical experiment is presenting opposing viewpoints. That's radical on college campuses now. Presenting Glenn Lowry's work. Oh, my gosh. Wow. You are really coloring outside the lines now. Boy, look at you. But it's indicative of how far academia has fallen when it comes to the idea that a campus should be a free marketplace of ideas, that actually putting meaning to that phrase at Tufts is so controversial. But all that said, I appreciate that Professor Hirsch designed the class and is making the effort. Perhaps it will spur others to do similarly. For more on this, and we'll level up and talk a little POTUS politics, please be joined by former Wisconsin governor and now the president and CEO of the Young Americas Foundation. He is Scott Walker. Scott, thanks for joining us, as always. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning. Great to be with you.
You know, you look for green shoots when you talk about what's happening on college campuses. Maybe this course at Tufts is one such green shoot?
Yeah, I hope so. Although I was just waiting for the other shoe to drop to tell me that they were treating it like an archaeological dig that they were saying, what exactly is up with these so-called conservatives?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we're constantly, just when we bring lectures at Young America's Foundation, YF.org, if people are interested, we have the largest campus conservative lecture series in America. And it's always amazing to me that on these, like you say, many of these prestigious schools will talk this great talk. And then when we bring in, you know, even just a slightly right of center lecturer, they go completely bonkers, as though people are going to be threatened. Their safety is concerned. And it's because they just haven't ever been challenged on any of this stuff. It's not even just left and center. They're outright, you know, Marxist in many cases. And so to have a little bit different of opinion being expressed on campus is sadly all too often a shocking thing. It's guaranteed by the Constitution, at least at public institutions. It should be revered at all colleges and universities.
But no one wants their feelings hurt anymore.
Well, they bought into this false belief you were just referencing, too, that somehow we need to have special protections out there. No, we need to have – people should have – all of us should have freedom, not just this class, that class, whatever class. No, we all have rights that are given to us not by the government but by God. And if we have governments at all levels, starting at our federal level all the way through down to the local level, that uphold those rights in a republic, not a democracy, but in a republic, it shouldn't matter whether you're black or white, young or old, gay or straight. It shouldn't matter any of those things. In a society such as that, the one that our Declaration of Independence spelled out, that's one where we're all protected. And then it's up to us to do what we want to do with that, the individual. People always ask, what's the difference between a conservative and a liberal? I said, simply put, conservatives believe in you. Liberals believe in the government. And that's where people have to make a choice. Do you want the government dictating your life, or do you want to do it?
Well, it's the reason that Professor Hirsch's course is important, and the new School for Civic Life that's being stood up at North Carolina, and these other, you know, one-offs, I have to say. But I mean, you have these kids at Tufts who've never been challenged until they took Hirsch's class. And then they go on to be like reporters for Politico, like, since you just mentioned the source of our rights, Heidi Prisbola, who famously talked about white nationalists a few weeks ago. And you have to understand, I think it was on, you know, Morning Joe or some other ghastly show like that. You have to understand, there's these white nationalists. They believe, wait for it, they believe our rights come from God, not the government. I mean, this is somebody, she's saying this incredulously. She got an advanced degree from Michigan State University. And she... clearly, the idea that our rights come from God, which is explicitly enshrined in our founding documents, clearly that is something she has never read, never contemplated, and never heard argued.
Yeah, you're right. With North Carolina, you referenced that as well. North Carolina, there's a bill up that I actually think is a wonderful thing all across the country that said for every public institution of higher education, there was a statewide requirement that at least three credit hours for everyone who wants to graduate had to be in a course that taught, didn't even say how you had to teach it, just that it was taught, that included as a part of their lessons, reading the Constitution, reading the Declaration of Independence, reading other important documents like the Emancipation Proclamation, the letter from Birmingham Jail, at least five of the Federalist Papers. You know what? Nearly 700 tenured professors at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill alone, wrote a letter in protest because they don't want students reading those things, because students might realize, hey, you know what? These founders, despite some of their personal flaws, were actually pretty brilliant. They spelled out something that was pretty remarkable. They want to be the conduit through which these young people get things. And that's where you end up with so-called experts not even getting that our founding is based on the principle that God, not the government, gives us those rights.
I wanted to, by the way, there is this survey out that points to this conversation as well. We should incorporate that, you know, we've seen a lot of evidence to suggest that these college campuses are places of particular intolerance, and that these kids that have been indoctrinated at totalitarian reeducation camps at the K through 12 level are bringing that to college campus, including the most prestigious colleges, reputedly. But we find from a recent survey that there's actually a good bit of support for free speech and free thought among college students. I mean, it's still not where it should be, which is at 100%. But it's not, maybe it's not as dire as sometimes we're led to believe.
Yeah, I think there's waves out there, and as people see on the left and on the right, that if you take away the free ability, the ability in a free society to speak out, to say what you want to say, that's at risk whether you're on the right or the left. I think for a while there was this push, and there are still some out there that somehow think, you know, that something I disagree with should somehow not be said because it's uncomfortable or uneasy. I think it's been eye-opening. Certainly, unfortunately, even though the survey shows better results among students, you still see the administrators, like we saw at Penn and Harvard and MIT and others out there, where on one hand they try and shut down speakers like ours at Young America's Foundation, while the flips, and they say, well, that's, you know, that's not free speech. That's about protecting the feelings of certain groups that might be offended by this, versus say when Jewish students were literally targeted over the last few months on some of these campuses. They're like, oh, well, we can't do anything about that because that's free speech. But I think the students are starting to get it. I think they're starting to see the extreme. I think things like Elon Musk taking over Twitter, now X, have helped tremendously, because if we just start leveling the playing field and people like him making the case that, yeah, you know, free speech is actually a good thing, I think that has had an impact, and why you start to see the tide shift at least a little bit with younger people.
We had this discussion earlier. I'd like you to weigh in on it. We're talking about Ronna McDaniel's very, very brief status as a NBC News contributor.
Three days.
And, I mean, I find Ronna McDaniel to be a woefully ineffective communicator, both her performance on Meet the Press this past Sunday was more testimony to that. But the larger point is, why does Ronna McDaniel want to follow in the footsteps of Michael Steele? Why do Republicans and conservatives, you know, why are they constantly pulling the shirt tails of antagonistic, really hateful, spiteful leftist media to provide any legitimacy to those platforms? They ignore legitimate conservatives. They just want Republicans that are going to defecate on the Republican Party, and Trump in particular. And yet we still run to them and say, well, let's co-sponsor this debate. The point that Ramaswamy made in the debate to Kristen Welker in no uncertain terms. Oh, please, let's have us on. Oh, I'm happy to come on this week until Stephanopoulos disgraces himself in that interview with Nancy Mace. Now, all of a sudden, Nancy Mace isn't coming on and Republicans aren't coming on this week. What does it take to get through? Stop aiding and abetting your enemy. And the D.C. press corps, these old corporate outlets, are the enemy of the Republican Party and the conservative movement.
Couldn't agree with you more. And I think there should be, for example, the debate, completely different format. Don't go with traditional outlets. Shake things up. People are going to tune in because of content, not because of broadcast. I think it's shocking. Remember, years ago, the second debate in the 2016 cycle, I was sitting on the stage next to people like Donald Trump and Ben Carson and then Jeb Bush, thinking, why would we give somebody a platform like that who's so clearly has disdain for not just conservatives, but for primary voters out there? I just think it's obnoxious. But it is amazing to me that the same network that gives the woman who defended the lies that Joe Biden said about Russian collusion and his campaign said, that said lies about the border being secure, is suddenly now upset about someone like Ronna McDaniel that being on it. The hypocrisy is breathtaking, and we shouldn't give them any more time.
Well, Governor, don't you think it's a form of censorship, too? I mean, they have no real Republicans with an opposing opinion.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think people, it's an eye-opener. I'll occasionally go on conflicting networks myself, but I don't do what sadly you've seen with too many of these, and that is just lay down their ideas, not say what they would say. networks. You watch me on Fox or any other network, I'm going to say the same thing the same way every instance. And sadly, a lot of these networks, as you said, want Republicans to come on and say, well, you know, when I said this, I was really forced to, or when I said this, I really didn't mean that. No, they need to hear the truth. They need to understand what people are saying. I remember for years confronting Chuck Todd. In fact, once he was in Waukesha, Wisconsin, not too far from where my mother lives, and this was right before the 2022 election. And he asked me, you know, in the midst of this long debate and this long interview about Ron Johnson and other things going on, he asked me about January 6th, and I said, walk around this park. There's not a one person in this park at this moment who cares about January 6th, a year and a half after it happened. And he was still obsessed with it. That's what you get out of many of these corporate elites.
Scott Walker is the former governor of Wisconsin, of course, president and CEO of Young America's Foundation, which, by the way, back in the day when Rob Robinson was the president, I used it, you know, back in the Stone Age when I went to Northwestern to bring in, at the time, speakers like Dinesh D'Souza, who was just coming to the fore, Bill Bennett and others. So Young America's Foundation is a great organization to get conservative speakers on campus. If your sons and daughters are on college campuses, they want to do what Professor Hirsch is doing at Tufts, which is to avail their fellow students of conservative ideas, then Young America's Foundation is a good place to start. Scott, thanks so much for joining.
YAF.org, we'd love to have
them. YAF.org, YAF.org. Scott, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Samuel Say is a Ghanaian-Canadian Christian writer and preacher. I think he's in Ohio now, but anyway. He tweeted out, I had to discipline my son tonight. It's not the first time, but I'm heartbroken. It's necessary, but I hate it so much. It's especially difficult since he's such a good boy. He's such an easy boy to parent, but he's still a sinner, and since I love him, I must discipline him. His son is 4 months old, and...
Ooh. 4 months? They don't know what they're doing at 4 months, but okay, that's his business.
Yeah, thank you for playing into the left on this.
Well, Dan, I have had a 4 month old. A 4 month old? What did he do at 4 months?
Oh, what did he do? Oh, that's the question you're supposed to ask. Right. But instead, because he's a Christian, the leftist mafia that's so good at managing the lives of others called authorities and filed a complaint and said his kid should be taken away and excoriated him online and so on and so forth. Samuel Say explained further. On that night, my son was unusually difficult. He was very sleepy, but though he had a clean diaper and a full belly, he wouldn't stop crying no matter how I held him. So I figured I should place him in his crib. I decided to let him cry in his crib momentarily, which was very hard for me. I was heartbroken knowing he wanted me to pick him up, but I thought it was necessary. Moments later, he fell asleep and stayed asleep until the morning. That's what my tweet was about. I hated hearing him cry in the crib. I wish I didn't have to do that. I love my son, and I love rocking him to sleep. But I knew it was necessary. I was teaching him how to sleep on his own. I assume that kind of sleep training falls under the umbrella of quote-unquote discipline.
Oh, to me, that does not fall under the umbrella of discipline. That's
well, you're not from
parenting.
I'm not from Ghana.
I don't know what his...
But that's what the left does, is we want to jump to, especially because he's a Christian. So we assume that, you know, it's Christians. All Christians are hypocrites, and that's where the abuse really takes place. Not the secular world. The secular humanists are all magical people who don't sin and who don't exploit children. It's the religious people that we have to worry about. This is the message you get everywhere in American society today. And it leads to these ignorant mobs that try and roust Samuel say, to the extent of taking a tweet, 140 characters, without any context and without even considering, what do you mean by discipline? And calling authorities to go take his kid. This is what you're dealing with. Now, those same people will become aware of an expose done 6 years ago by the Tribune that details hundreds of credible claims of sexual abuse and assault in the Chicago public school system, confirmed by the Chicago Corp Counsel's office, and nothing happens. No one says anything. Process that dichotomy when you want a commentary on where America is these days culturally and who are the problems and who are those that are living an example that perhaps should be emulated. For more on this, since he recently wrote on the topic, we're pleased to be joined by our old friend Willie Wilson, former mayoral candidate and candidate for other offices as well. Also a philanthropist and businessman, as you know. Willie Wilson's piece in the Tribune, Protecting Our Kids from Abuse Must Be Our Highest Priority. Willie, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Both of us, Dan, you and Amy. Appreciate you. I'm a favorite guys, you know?
So you picked up in the piece in the Tribune that you penned on this situation at CPS. So give us your perspective. I don't think we've talked about this. I think we actually did when you were a candidate, but let's get into more depth on it. So what is it? How can parents and clergy and other alleged stakeholders in the school system, how can everyone turn a blind eye to this? Where are the trial lawyers to sue CPS? Where's anybody saying anything except now you, after we spent years doing it?
Yeah. Well, one thing that the Chicago Public School is a situation that, look, the Inspector John got on him, but like it needs to be, in my opinion, as you read, McCollum should be, maybe the federal government should get involved. They have to report to them. I think these Chicago unions got to take on a lot of their responsibilities themselves, too, you know.
When the feds get done with P. Diddy, maybe they can take a look at CPS.
I agree with you totally, 100%. Now it goes further than just the CPS, as you know. You got stuff going on in the religion community, even in your own household, and those type of things there, and churches, the whole nine yards. But the public school system should be investigated, and those people should be held accountable for them. The politics that they play. Look, our kid is the future of this whole country, you know. And so I would like to see somebody just get in there and open this thing back up, investigate, do an audit of this whole situation without turning a blind eye to it. The mayor, he was I guess before he became mayor, he was a, you know, Chicago Public School. I mean, I'm sure he's very aware of this, too, and the governor, too. So they should open up these investigations and start prosecuting people and holding them accountable, you know?
Well, they should prosecute, because I know some of them, they should be in jail. If they did that to any other kid outside of the school, they would be. So why do you think parents are sitting back and just watching this happen?
I think, in my opinion, some of the areas, I just think that a lot of the parents are depressed and trying to make a living with the inflation and things of that nature, and hold a job and trying to pay bills, trying to buy food and things of that nature. So much occupied, and they're depressed. They don't come out and vote. The politicians keep raising taxes, you know. Just don't know what to do. And then I think also that the people, the parents, kind of like, saying what the use going into it. We're going to lose anyway. Nobody pay attention to us, you know. So I think it's a matter of a combination of all of this kind of situation going on. You got crime high and everything else. They got so many things on their mind. Now, I'm in church like every Sunday, two or three churches Sunday. I speak at church and sing around the country. And it's a lot of people out there, the kids, even the parents, and I ask every Sunday, when I'm speaking or singing, how many people in here have thought about committing suicide? I mean, y'all see the hand goes up. Ever thought about past or present committing suicide? That's a depression. People just depressed. You know, so a lot of these things here that should be taken care of by these politicians, they ought to take focus on that just like they focus on illegal immigrants, raising money and doing stuff that way. That they just all mix up, you know?
Well, so on the depression that allegedly paralyzes parents from, I don't know, reporting incidents of sexual abuse of their children. Boy, I don't know about that. Is that the same reason that nobody kicked up any dust over the tax credit scholarship program going away, and 10,000 families whose kids were on scholarship set to lose those scholarships, and another 30,000 families that were on the waiting list that will not get those scholarships? I mean, that's a lot of people invested in a better education for their kids that just lost that investment, and I don't hear anything about that either.
Well, you know, I wrote about that in one of my columns. You know, they stood by. Now, I acted the union took then killed that, in my opinion, because I do recall that the governor did say that somebody, they bring it to me. They bring it to me.
Lying.
I was signing the bill.
Pritzker was lying. Yeah. He knew he would get killed. That's a lie. So I mean, forget who killed him. You know who killed it. Chris Welch did the bidding of J.B. Pritzker.
Yeah,
that's how it got killed. So where are the parents to hold? Where are the parents out going out to Proviso Township to give it to Chris Welch? Where are they out giving it to Governor Pritzker? Where are they out making their case? I didn't see it.
No, they're not. And you know, like, these guys control politics, controls our lives, and people of that nature. I believe they just beat us down and beat us down until people don't even want to come out and vote no more. It's just that depression. But them kids, it's a whole new thing. You know, it's a whole new thing. And I don't know how you deal with it in terms of really prosecuting these jokers, you know? But I would encourage the parents and everybody else, or some small committee from the community, or some just get out and start to put something together and raise these issues and get concerned about them, because they are serious issues, you know. But I did that. How to find where to start with all this politics and things of that nature. And politicians need to be prosecuted themselves, be honest with you, Dan.
Yeah, well, that would be nice. Would be nice.
So, Dr. Willie Wilson, what are you hearing from the people in your church and your community about the migrant situation?
Terrible. I mean, like, we are there. I'm also mad about it, be honest. We're about to write about that, too. The bottom line is that, look, the people in the community need help. These are the people who pay taxes. These are the people that voted them into office. Now you got illegal, I'm putting illegal there, come into the country and get, you know, health care, get money for all the different things, taking from the resource and leaving them hanging out. That ain't gonna never go away, in my opinion. This is sad. And for the mayor and also for the governor to raise this kind of money, millions and millions of dollars to help that cause, and leading the people out of office, leading the people in the community, that is, out in the street. People got to move out the shelter and let other people come in there, not from the country. It's sickness and sadness. It defies common sense.
Well,
so if it ain't common sense, I don't know what it is. I ain't got an answer for it. It's not a word, not even a dictionary.
And it's also another situation, going back to the general theme of our conversation, of the exploitation of children. I mean, that's what the city and the county and the state are doing. They're facilitating the exploitation of children, from human smugglers and drug cartels to herding them into these makeshift shelters where a five-year-old gets sick and dies. How is that not the exploitation of children?
Well, I totally agree with you. You know, these and the other thing, too, is that, look, when COVID-19 hit, I mean, but look, they bring these illegal immigrants comes in. Nobody check them out in terms of health care or nothing. Now you got the measles outbreak. Both of them, from my understanding, is come out of the immigrant department there. I mean, where they're staying at. Nobody checks on them. They can go to the airport and just about get on whatever flight they want to get on, go whatever they got to do. I just don't have an answer for it. The politicians have lost it. They violate the Constitution. You can't go in any country in China. I've been around the world four times at least. I need visa and things like that to get into the country. But America let people come in, not even check them out. People who they know is the number one enemy overseas coming to this country, not checking them out, and say not there. And then the sanctuary city, they wouldn't even allow to get on, as you know, on the ballot for the people to vote whether Chicago should be a sanctuary city or not. Mm-hmm. You know, so these things here, I've been trying to figure out in my mind, what do you call it? It's a disease that is unknown somewhere. Well, what are people thinking? This ain't human, you know?
Yeah, it's the Stockholm syndrome, and it's Stockholm, and you're identifying with the barbarians who are your captors. But but speaking of the ballot, the Cook County State's Attorney's race, what is your take on that? A very methodical counting, taking their sweet time, because no vote shall be counted until it's time in Cook County. And whether the outcome of the race matters in terms of Harris or Burke, either one, any prospect in your view for improvement when it comes to removing repeat violent offenders from the streets?
Well, we already know we got some violence on the street. Yeah, you have to enforce these laws. I've stated, as you know, when I was running, was that you got to take some of the restrictions off the particular our police officer and let them do their job. And I understand the pros and cons on both sides of it, you know. But you commit a crime, you must be held accountable for it. Otherwise, people get out here and kill other people and they'll even be accountable and they just still walk and nobody catching nobody.
So either Harris or Burke, are they going to change anything? Is anything going to be different than it was under Fox?
I sure hope that thing will be different. I don't know much about now. I want to be honest with you, no more than from their background, what they have said. Nobody really came out into the community. I didn't see anybody in my circle where I came out and talked and even asked questions, to be honest with you, Dan. I didn't see none of them. What I think they're going to do any good or not, I didn't change in terms of what's going on now. I have no idea because we haven't been able to talk to nobody. Hmm. Don't know their background about everything, just to act to do it. Come out and talk like we did when we was with the mayor. We was out in the community all the time and had people ask questions and everything else. We got to know a little bit about them, but this happened to happen in this case. I really don't know on this one.
Well, so Clayton Harris the third, didn't reach out to speak in front of your congregation or anything?
I haven't seen him myself personally, period. I have not seen him. I mean, the people reached out to me to talk to me about terms of and endorsement. I just didn't do anything in that way because I didn't know what about them. I mean, to me, you have to explain and come out and talk and tell you what your agendas are and things of that nature. I be in the church all the time, but I haven't seen him myself. I don't mean that he haven't been out here, but it would mean that I have not seen him. And I am in the heart of these churches all the time. I just haven't seen it.
Well, I guess
I don't want to depart.
Yeah, well, I guess when you say, as Clayton Harris did, that he would give Kim Fox an A grade for her performance over the last 8 years, I guess you really don't need to say anything more after that. Willie Wilson, a humanitarian and businessman, of course. Willie, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.